Welcome to Pickle Me This, the officially unofficial podcast for Rick and Morty on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Today we're covering Season 2, Episode 4, Total Recall. Here's Aaron with the recap.
The Smith House is overran by alien parasites that spread by implanting false memories of themselves into other sentient beings. Rick has to figure out which of the zany, colorful characters is a parasite and which are just Jerry before they escape their home's containment and take over the Earth.
All right, Aaron, what'd you think of this one?
I think it is great. It's like the concept of a clip show where the clips never existed. You got that same kind of like loose feel, but like a clip show is a bummer because it's 75%. Recycled content and 25% framing device for that horseshit. You know, Riker got bit by an alien snake and he's regressing through his memories because reasons. This is all original and it allows them to get even crazier and out there with like playing with themes about like what if Jerry had was stepping out on his wife with her husband kind of thing, and but play around with that without it being too kind of like impacty to the characterizations, and kind of just in general color outside the lines even more than they already do. I mean, just and like Tinkles and Never Past Bedtime Land. I love that shit. I think it's hilarious. I don't know that this has as much deep meaning as some of the other episodes, but it is iconic and fun. Like, this is in everybody's top five episodes, if not your top three. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a nice playground for probably especially Justin to create a bunch of stupid, crazy characters with weird names and just weird concepts. And I bet this was a ton of fun in the writer's room to just sort of riff on, oh, what character we can do? Reverse Giraffe. I don't know. And it'll be Keith David. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like you said, it's a ton of fun. I think there's a little bit of meat to pull off the bones and chew on when it comes to like the resolution of this plot.
Okay.
And how they determine who's real and who isn't, but we'll get there.
All right. Well, where do you want to start on this episode?
Keith David, obviously. Okay.
All right.
Keith David, the iconic voice of Keith David.
We've got Keith David as Reverse Giraffe. It's funny because I feel like maybe I'm stupid, but that's the one thing that I don't get. Because
Reverse Giraffe or Keith David?
Reverse Giraffe. Reverse Giraffe and Keith David. Reverse Giraffe is he seems like he's just a neck with legs.
Yeah, but his arms are really high up, or I guess his front legs are really high up his torso.
Right.
So that technically makes his neck very short and his body very long.
But see, when I hear like, I guess, but I the long body, like the wiener dog style body, just reads as a long neck, especially with like the reticulated, you know, honeycomb patterns got, and like that mane, it feels like it went like all the way down its back. I'm like, well, that's just the neck, man. That's So
goddamn, we're really coming out the gates with this.
Your reverse giraffe just really threw me. It didn't match my conception of what a reverse giraffe looked like. So
you know what I've never identified harder with Justin Roiland than in this episode.
Oh.
When Rick busts in and he's waving around these Nintendo 3DSs and says, like, oh dude, I got the fucking deal, I got the hookup, I'm gonna flip these on eBay. I'll admit to have done that a couple times.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while when you see a market failure, you got to jump in there.
You got
to,
like when Toys R Us goes out of business, perhaps.
Yeah.
You gotta get in there, get those 3DSs.
Stock up on that shit. I mentioned in our kind of just general review that I really like that Tinkles and Never Past Bedtime Land because I'm not too far outside of my experience watching children's entertainment with my very young son, like when they're like between 2 and 3. And I had heavy doses of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Okay, there are worse.
You know, I don't thank God, you know, because I also was exposed to the Wiggles briefly.
Oh,
and
Christ.
I had to go into a rehab center. But the thing about the Thomas is like when you buy the DVDs, and you'll eventually buy the DVDs, and they were DVDs back then, not Blu-rays. they have like a couple episodes, but then they also have some like bonus features, like a musical number. And one of the Thomas, it's I think it's Thomas number one or something. There's a rap that breaks out in the middle of this thing where this guy, and he's like an English rapper.
Okay.
So he's like extra cool. He sounds like a dude from a Guy Ritchie movie that just happens to rap. So it's like all these different cool things fused together. And he's like it's not even a lazy verse, and the beat's kind of fire. And it just, I feel like the whoever animated or set this, like, had to have seen that, because it's exactly like this. This guy comes out of nowhere and starts like talking tough about tanks, man.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. I've not seen that featurette, that special.
Oh, man. Maybe there's only like three parents that their kids are still in the Thomas. And they're like, yeah, I remember that one, Aaron.
Yeah.
But, window into my soul.
You know what shocked me is this is the second time in as many episodes that Summer has peed her pants, and it seems to be becoming a thing.
Did she pee her pants? What, did she pee her pants
last
episode?
Yeah, so she pees her pants in the elevator, and
obviously,
then in
yeah.
Shit, A Wrinkle in Time, she pees her pants.
When?
When Morty says it, after they kind of come back from the split times.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she pees her pants.
Oh, because, okay. Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. I guess they're making her a...
Summer is a pants beer.
MCP pants.
Is that a coping mechanism for your mom being a raging alcoholic? Because, wow... A lot of the flashback sequences here of the familial pain are pretty brutal.
Man, I think the best thing in this entire episode is at the very end when Beth runs to the kitchen cabinet and pours wine.
Oh my God. The animation
is so amazingly perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's just so funny. Let's talk about Mr. Poopy Butthole.
Okay.
How, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much does it bother you that Mr. Poopy Butthole is an old family friend that's always been in here, and he's in the credit sequence, and he's also not a parasite? Because it's a 1. It doesn't bother me.
It does not bother me one bit.
Like, I give this show permission to just do funny things, and okay, but here's the thing. Like, we talked a couple episodes ago about how we kind of trust this show not to just fuck with us. This was in the spoiler section. We were evaluating a theory, and we're like, oh, one of the reasons we don't believe it is because... you know, they wouldn't like fuck with us that bad.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little bit of fucking with us.
Why do you say that?
Because,
is it just the way Mr. Poopy Butthole is introduced?
Well, yeah, and it's the whole concept of like, you know, they insert yourselves in their memory. And I will admit that the first time I saw this, I thought they were going with that. Like, Mr. Poopy Butthole is now in the credit sequence, so we as the audience are now infected too.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then they kind of invert that when Beth shoots him at the end. Again, it doesn't bother me because I'm giving the show its slack, but I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I think the thing that helps in this episode is that everything kind of tracks. Like, when Mr. Poopy Butthole shows up, he takes them to memories and flashbacks that aren't pleasant. Like, getting stuck in an elevator, not super pleasant, right? Getting harassed by a Nazi while you're tied up and... Mm-hmm. You know, regardless of how charming Mr. Beauregard is, not a pleasant memory. So, like, it's interesting because I think Beth is sort of in the right to look at this and go, Mr. Poopy Butthole kind of started all this.
Yeah.
He must be a flashback virus.
Yeah.
Parasite. But in retrospect, if she thought about it a little bit longer, those weren't positive memories. Therefore, he can't be.
Plus, the... brief interludes in the credit sequences are in no way, you know, by and large, positive memories. People are getting hurt. People are getting disintegrated. People are being chased by alien monsters and eaten alive. So, and he's in all those. So, yeah, I guess you're right. That's almost like a reverse foreshadowing.
Yeah, I feel like a super observant, and I'm not saying I am, audience member could have sort of deduced that Mr. Poopy Butthole was real.
Yeah.
After watching that episode the first time.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and I'm not going to call myself that much on the ball, especially in my average state when I'm watching Rick and Morty. I love the concept of these guys being like bed bugs and the flashbacks are the mattresses, like just the, like and how like geometrically they reproduce. Like, these nested, like, most of my favorite sequences are the nested flashbacks that launch other flashbacks and always leads to, like, Rick screaming, like, nah, stop. He sees it, and then, like, the whole fucking room's full.
Yeah. Yeah, his reaction when they zoom out to the Where's Waldo thing is great.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great, and it is a lot of fun to pause and look at all that. And I also love how the show is, like, kind of self-aware when they're talking about the Hammer Eye and Cyborg Amish Farmer, and they're like, what is this, 90s Conan?
Yeah, is this where I point out that our podcast is devolving into Wasn't It Funny When?
Yeah,
can we
much.
Be that self-aware?
Pretty much. But there's the things that make this work are, there's enough kind of like clever hooks where, like, the people, like, there's things you can say about Rick himself that seems so unreal in this concept. Like, oh, are we supposed to believe a mad scientist inventor landed a flying car in our garage and just came into our lives in the last year? And you know, we know that Rick is, like, galactically smart, but he is, it's all that he can do. In fact, he doesn't solve the problem.
No, he doesn't.
Morty is the one that fixes it. And that's kind of a neat little humanization moment, of Rick as well.
Yeah, and the way that Morty fixes the problem, like realizing, oh, if I have a bad memory of someone, they can't be a parasite, because parasites can only manufacture positive memories. I feel like says something about people's relationships. Like, they're trying to say, look, if you've never seen the bad side of someone, you kind of don't really know them.
That's
they're not
true.
Really a person. Like,
because
everyone has
to have a bad side, right?
Yeah, I would think so, yeah.
Mr. Rogers? I mean...
He's the exception. And Tom Hanks, of course.
Plus, also, turns out, if you've seen the documentary, crippling self-doubt.
True.
He had, like, you know, maybe... And even then, it's like, you know... if you had a dad, would you rather have your dad scream at you every once in a while, or a dad put on a puppet on his hand and start talking about his feelings? Like, actually, no, the latter sounds pretty rad. But, you know.
It depends. How old am I in this scenario?
It didn't matter. 35, he's still getting King Friday out if he wants to put his dad voice on. But yeah, no, it's you're
right. You
really
ought to be saving more for retirement, son.
Yeah.
The fuck, Dad?
You're gaining some weight, boy. You know, blood sugar. No, that wouldn't be a king. He'd be like, well, diabetes is a problem in the royal kingdom, son.
Get your prostate checked.
Let's go talk. You should see Daniel about it. He gets his blood checked every day. Yeah, no, that's a great point. You have to see someone's ass before you've seen the whole person.
Yeah, I think so.
If you don't see the ass, you're like the blind man that just feels the elephant's trunk and thinks he's got a snake. You don't know the whole elephant until you've worked your way around.
It's implying the ass is like the bulk of a person.
It's the thing you see last when you meet him, right? Unless you sneak up from behind, and that's not the way a friend. That's not the way a friend acts.
Mr. Beauregard, I like a lot because he's kind of like a Mr. Belvedere type, but he's also like a Mrs. Doubtfire type at some point.
Yep.
And I thought that character was, you know, mostly harmless, but also just funny.
Mm-hmm. A lot of these negative memories are just like horrifying. I sometimes think it's like Rick. Which is the most painful memory? Him being doused by a lava monster, him being eaten by a crab, or his grandpa de-pantsing him and shoving him down a full flight of stairs in front of girls in his high school?
That was like, a choice one.
That's pretty fucking brutal. And then, like,
I think Morty would say that's the one.
Yeah. And then, like, if you're summer, worse. You're coming home and catching your brother masturbating into the kitchen sink.
Yep.
And I like how, like, Morty's kind of defensive. Like, you know, I thought you were gone. I'm not doing this to be creepy. I'm supposed to have the house to myself. I'm 14. I masturbate everywhere. And then, like, summer won't let up. So he finally, like, all right, fine. I'm going full nuclear. I'm thinking about your friend.
Yep. The kick to the balls that Summer delivers is pretty rough.
Which is the worst scarring memory? Jerry abandoning Beth to a raving, dangerous, homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
Summer catching Morty jerking off in the kitchen sink, Summer being forgotten about on her picture day, and her mom giving her a black eye accidentally because she's in a drunken stupor.
I mean, yeah, like I said, there's just the straight up kick to the balls.
Yeah, that's always popular, but I feel like that's tame.
Yeah. I feel like adults...
That's wholesome. That's America's Funniest Video wholesome.
Oh, that's true, yeah. I feel like the adults are better equipped to deal with, you know, really weird or embarrassing shit happening. So, like, anything that happens to the kids is de facto going to be worse. So maybe some are catching Morty.
Oof.
Because, like, Beth, I don't know, 3 days from now is going to forget about that homeless guy.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or at least stop worrying that she'll be attacked by homeless people in the parking lots.
Yeah, I guess if you're right, if you take it, it's like these are young people and these are going to be definitional moments in their lives.
But that's why I said the ball kick was also bad, because Morty is probably going to be paranoid about being kicked in his balls for the rest of his life.
Yeah, you can never let your guard down. Got to guard that beanbag, son.
Yeah. What must the neighbors think when the house goes into full lockdown?
Right.
And...
I mean, I'm really warming up to the theory that we're going to find out that Rick's got just like an anti-normie field that just people can't even see the weird shit. Or maybe it'd be really hilarious if however that technology works is people look at it and it just looks like the perfect family. Like their yard's always in great shape. And
do we even know that they have neighbors? Like, have we seen...
Oh, my God. What if Rich replaced the whole block with simulations just because he knows there might be a 400-foot-wide crater in the street every once in a while?
Right.
And, you know, it's not that he cares that people would die, but there's questions. There'd be paperwork.
Yeah, there's probably a scene somewhere where somebody's walking down the street with a dog or something.
Yeah, but if it's just like if you freeze frame by frame, like it glitches like on three different frames. It's like imperceptible to the human eye, but if you study it on Blu-ray... hit it. Everything from Rick, you know, at once Morty cracks the code and Rick reveals his wall of amazing guns. Mm-hmm. Everything from that is just fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And must be difficult to animate. Like, I was just thinking all of the stuff that, like, it's not just you've got a, it's just not like a video game where you have one type of grunt that you shoot and it's always going to morph into this thing when it dies. Like, they are morphing refrigerator people into these alien parasites and ball fondlers and velociraptors and just ghosts in jars. The ghost in jar detail where, like, he empties the ghost out of the jar and then kills the ghost and it turns into two halves of a parasite. Like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
The animation team is really good. It reminded me of Rick Potion number 9 with the Cronenberg stuff and that morphing.
I wonder, but almost more so.
Yeah.
I wonder if they have, like, technological assistance or if those particular animations have to always be kind of, you know, somewhat
keyframe or hand custom
animated. Yeah.
Yeah, I would think so.
I thought it's like, man, you can, maybe there's a routine where it's like, you know, you just write, you pay a nerd, you know, however much money for 80 hours to do the thing rather than 20 animators, 100 hours a piece.
And they do it often enough on this show that it'd probably come in
handy. Yeah.
Probably pay for itself.
Yeah. It's like, where are these itches? We gotta have badass transformational technology. Maybe if we get someone on the show, we can ask them about that. Cause I would be really curious about like how much software assists and how that really changes the industry.
Let me ask you about Jerry.
Okay.
And his relationship with Sleepy...
Gary.
Beth says it's going to take a while for her to forget about that. So apparently all these memories are going to be kind of with them. And you said early on, you know, it doesn't do much for, like, the story or the characters here. But, like, now they all have these weird set of memories that they're legitimately not sure what is and isn't real.
But they know that they considered them pleasant.
Yeah.
So, like, Jerry really loved Sleepy Gary and got it on with him on that Star Wars Tuscany cruise they took.
Yeah.
Which, so good. Like,
it's so ridiculous.
I mean, but
maybe
it's like,
we'll
see
Chewbacca.
But, I mean, you could totally see them doing, like, oh, you know, let's do this. I go to rent a boat and it's, oh, man.
I just like that Sleepy Gary's, like, pants are unbuttoned when he comes out from the cabin.
Uh-huh.
Like, Gary's got an agenda.
Does he have an agenda, or they're just comfortable and doing what comes natural, man?
Yeah, that's fair.
It's like you see the sun on the hills and
you see Chewbacca,
the warm
on
glow
the shore.
Of Chewbacca embracing you. Yeah, it's what red-blooded American man says no to that?
Yeah. And so, I guess Beth is going to have to get over her lost love of Sleepy Gary.
Well, it's interesting. It's like, what's interesting is I wonder what Sleepy Gary was to Beth, because mm-hmm. it's interesting that he could be two different people. He could be two different things to two different people based on, you know, obviously it doesn't take me a lot to sell the idea that Beth had a better relationship with Sleepy Gary than she did with Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm like, I wish I could have seen her version of, like, was it like she did a triple bypass at the Kentucky Derby? And then they flew back on her executive horse jet, and like, what did that look like for her? What was her Star Wars cruise yeah. in Italy on a catamaran?
Good question. Kentucky Derby sounds right.
What is your favorite catchphrase out of all of the improv catchphrases?
I think it's lick, lick, lick my balls. But
really?
Yeah.
The classic. I like grass tastes bad. Grass tastes bad, and that, and although that's the way the news goes, gets a lot of play at our house. Like anytime,
yeah,
like someone's just said something bad, like bad news, but not like devastatingly bad. You know, you wouldn't say this, like, oh, my mom's in the hospital, and that's the way. It's kind of like, oh God, you know, I was late to work and somebody cut me off, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to what they were trying ironically to cement as a catchphrase mm-hmm. earlier in the season with Rick saying, and away we go.
Yeah, yeah.
He said it like three times in that first episode.
You got to be careful, lick, lick, lick my balls, because you say that like three times and you'll say it all day long. It's like a song to get stuck in your head.
Yeah.
And I have firsthand,
maybe that's why I like it.
Firsthand evidence that really annoys the piss out of the people to love you around you.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
All right, now that we've eliminated all the parasites, it's time to take out our portal guns and plot to the future as we open up a portal to Dimension BM-77, accessing behind-the-scenes details, trivia, spoilers for future episodes, a.k.a. the part where we watch all the commentaries and read all the wikis and tell you what we learned on them. I thought it was interesting that this is, and a lot of people that are Buffy fans might find this interesting, is that this episode is inspired. I thought it'd be inspired by, like, The Thing. You know, because you got, you know, Keith David, and yeah. It's very broadly kind of like a funnier version of that. But it's actually inspired by, in season 5, Michelle Trachtenberg played Dawn, Buffy's sister, who had Buffy had never had a sister before. And she just shows up and everyone in the cast just goes off with it like she's always been there. Mm-hmm. And then it's revealed that she's actually some other entity and they've hid her in everyone's memories. And the show doesn't play it like this, but the writer said that, like, he found that concept that you could just have these memories embedded and not know it, like, very horrifying. Mm-hmm. And there is lurking something we didn't talk about in the broader discussion, but there is something. One of the things that makes this episode work is there's some genuine menace. Like, when those blast shields come down and, like, you know, you think about, like, what Jerry's brother was trying to do. Oh, I bought you plane tickets to go on this European vacation. Like, clearly these things were trying to spread as fast and far across the earth as possible, and they was stopped in the nick of time.
Yeah.
That's like, it adds just enough tension to where the humor works.
Mm-hmm.
Really kudos on the chemistry job there.
I mean, it's not like a super original concept or anything. Like, this is just a sci-fi trope. I mean, it's been done. I mean, the name of the episode, Total Recall, is a callback to Total Recall, where one of the forms of entertainment was sort of implanting you in memories into your head about a life you hadn't lived.
Yeah. And then there's always like
Vanilla Sky. And I mean, yeah. There's a million different things that explore this concept.
Yeah. And there's also, like, I just watched a Next Generation episode where Picard's replaced by an alien clone. And the whole plot is a crew figuring out that he's not the real Picard.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out the Enterprise is one somewhat bizarre decision by Picard away from mutinying. It's like, when you got 43 minutes to tell a story, Riker don't give you a lot of slack before he gets the counselor and the medical officer and they start plotting mutiny.
He asked for Earl Grey cold. Oh my God.
What the? Lukewarm? That's not our Jean-Luc. Our Jean-Luc's not lukewarm. But it's like done to the nth degree, mm-hmm. right? You know, Paramount didn't have the money to fracture Picard into 20 different, slightly different looking versions of Picard.
Paramount had it, they probably just wouldn't spend it.
That's true.
Yeah.
They were spending it all and failing at taking over King's Island.
Fair.
I also think it was interesting because you heard, like, there's a lot of things that were bothered Dan in this episode where it seemed like Justin just kind of, like, more or less steamrolled. Like, nah, I'm going to go ahead and do my Where's Waldo thing. Nah, I'm going to go ahead and do my Nintendo joke. And
I bet he gets steamrolled a lot, so I'm all for it, Justin. Do your thing. If it means more things that I can so heavily relate to as, like, scoring deals on video games, yeah, do it.
And he mentioned that, like, one of the things that they learned this season was that, you know, like, you work so hard on the things that don't bring joy, and the things that do bring joy are just kind of, like, easy. Like, they talk about some of the details they sweat. Like, for example, one of the things that bothered them is, like, in the first kind of nesting series of events, the being stuck in the elevator, you know, Cousin Nikki's the hero of that, but then he's the one in undergoing a joint shared unpleasant experience with Belvedere, or Beauregard. So it's like, that doesn't really, but it's like, you know, fuck it. They could have spent a lot of time to go back and fix that.
Yeah.
But until I heard that commentary, it never even occurred to me that that's, you know, and shit. Like, I've enjoyed television shows where I can, every once in a while, I'll see a camera guy in a windshield,
right?
Like, sometimes, like, even with all the eyes on it, things happen, and, you know, Fuck.
I just watched a movie where it turns from night to day in about 35 seconds.
Yes.
And I had no problem with it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If that would be, if that's a 100th thing you had to overlook, then yeah, it becomes a problem. But when literally the first one is like, oh, and I didn't even catch it until the 10th viewing, that's not so bad. They talked about Dan's, like one of the notes that he sent, like a 9-page note to Justin about like how strongly he felt about removing this one scene. And Justin sends back a, yeah, Dan, I totally get it. But you know what? We'll survive.
Yeah.
Next time we have a heated argument and bald move, one of us has to try that. Ah, you know what? You're probably right, but we'll survive. No, we won't. At least Dan had the ability to say, yeah, you're probably right, but still.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, did you feel like this episode needed tweaking, needed like more of a plot, needed anything like that? Or
no. In fact, I wonder, that was one of the other questions I have, is like, how do you know when you're a writer when to bail on a formula? Like if you've got like,
or when
you know,
you're done with an episode.
Well, I don't it seems like it's conventional wisdom that you're not really done. It's just like, we got to move on because of the schedule.
Certainly in this season.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing.
And that's like about any creative process. Like very few people have the luxury to just spend an infinite amount of time polishing something until it's the work of art you want it to be. But
yeah.
We
get the nodules on the rocks, the virus.
Yep, that paid off.
Coming back this episode. Yeah, you can briefly see Rick dumping them in the trash.
Quicker than I thought, too. Like, my memory of this season, I thought that was, like, on a submarine for a couple episodes, but really it's just one. So, pretty good continuity there.
That's supposed to be the cause of this whole thing. And there was a mention of a big secret in Rick and Morty that they were never going to let the audience in on during the commentary. I did a little looking around, and it seems like there are two main theories. One is that, because they said in an interview somewhere that somebody nailed it on Reddit.
That's what I was
in like
that's
middle
what I was
of season one.
Ah.
And so people have gone back and looked at all the theories from around that time. The two prevailing ones are Rick knows he's in a cartoon. And and also Morty is not Rick's actual grandson. He's been essentially like Cronenberged from another world kind of thing.
So he I think in the commentary, they essentially copped to like, yeah, Rick knows he's in a television show, but like kind of in a fourth wall breaky kind of way. Like that, like that's not really a secret.
Yeah. I mean, when he looks at the camera and goes, that's it, season one in the bag, guys. Like, he knows he's in a cartoon.
Yeah. Which is weird. It's kind
of
like,
but if it was middle of season one and you're doing that, then maybe.
I wonder if they're going to go that where that actually becomes a thing. Like, is Rick going to be dissatisfied with his ratings? Is he going to rant and rave about the like the kind of commercials they're running in his slot? Or is it just going to be, you know? It's like, I don't know how to reconcile that. What?
Yeah, I don't think it honestly matters. Like, that's not the huge secret that would blow people's minds.
Yeah.
I think the latter one is more likely.
Yeah.
That Morty is actually not Rick's, you know, C-137 Rick's actual grandson.
Is that going to be, I'm trying to think, I mean, you can make anything mind-blowing, right? But if I found that out, I guess I wouldn't, it wouldn't throw me because he's already replaced every other piece of his family. And
I think the secret was intended to be something they never let the audience in on.
Mm.
So I don't know that we'll ever get a definitive answer to that.
Yeah, and we've all like, you know, I'm thinking of this last season where the whole idea of Beth, you know, is she a robot or isn't she a robot, and how open-ended that question is. And it's almost kind of like an emotional Rorschach test. Like, what you think Beth did says as much about you as it does her, because, you know, she's a kind of a Schrodinger's box. We won't know what she did until next season. If then, like that's, you know, it's funny because now that I'm thinking about it, like, I guess I would be fine with them playing around the idea of Beth being a robot for a couple of seasons. And then, like, wouldn't it be cool, like, in season six, if there's, like, some kind of Back to the Future Beth that comes and she's wearing futuristic clothes and she's got a portal gun and... Oh, my God, she's... I don't know. Like, that would be a lot of fun in a way that, like, I guess I would not be... I would be genuinely pissed if they did it at Rick and Morty, the characters themselves. But, like, Beth is a side enough character... And that would be a cool enough possibility for her to kind of achieve her ultimate goals. That'd be kind of an interesting idea.
Pickle Me This is distributed by Bald Move in association with Starburns Audio. It's produced by Jason Smith and Scott Porch from Starburns, and myself, Mineron, from Bald Move. All music featured on this podcast is from the Rick and Morty soundtrack, available from Sub Pop Records. Please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. To discover the many other great shows we do, please check out baldmove.com and starburns.audio. If you appreciate what we do and want to directly support us, consider joining our club at club.baldmove.com to get access to exclusive bonus audio and video features. Finally, you can follow us on your favorite social media at Bald Move. See you next time.